Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd suffer the effects of gingival hyperplasia if I had to chew on the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, to tell us what's going on.
Hey, Tony. We've got AI for the rest of us. Our coverage of the 2026 Nonprofit Technology Conference continues with Allison McMillan's survey of these AI tools, Claude, Gemini, Perplexity, and Suno. She reviews their use cases, the differences between them, their limitations, and pitfalls. Allison is CEO of Tavlene Consulting. Then, your AI acceptable use policy. Eric Mulho, founder of Bond Partners, explains what belongs in your AI acceptable use policy. As you and your AI tools learn iteratively from each other, evolving your policy and culture, you need guardrails around data protection, transparency, accuracy, ethics, and sustainability. On Tony's Take Two.
My updated book title.
Here is AI for the rest of us.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the 2026 Nonprofit Technology Conference right here in Detroit, Michigan. My guest for this session is Allison McMillan. Allison is CEO at Tavlene Consulting. Allison McMillan, welcome to Nonprofit Radio.
Hello, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Your subject is AI for the Rest of Us, a nonprofit professional's guide to getting started. Give us a 30,000-foot overview of the topic, please.
Yeah, I think right now, I mean, obviously AI is a super hot topic. There are lots and lots of sessions about AI, how to use it, how to adopt it. But I feel like until you get really hands-on with the tools and understand different tools, their use cases, et cetera, it's really hard to get to that aha moment or to get to that moment where you're like, oh, yes, I see where and how this can be useful. And so AI for the Rest of Us is really an introduction into what LLMs are, what the different tools are. We do sort of a survey of a handful of different tools, and then it's really getting hands-on with them so that you have that practice. You can compare and contrast tools, and you can really get deeper into which tools you might want to actually adopt, become a power user of, or use more once they go back home.
All right, cool. Thank you. And we've got plenty of time to dive into that. So why don't we begin with our survey of tools? How should we approach this? Do you want to just one by one? Should I throw them out? Chat, Anthropic, Claude, what? You know them.
Yeah, up to you. I mean, I can go through the ones that I went over in the session.
Please do, yeah.
So we started with Claude. We just spent a couple of minutes on Claude. Well, I guess we started with what I feel like are the best ways to even think about how to get started with using AI tools. Because oftentimes, people, they see all these really interesting, super complex use cases through, you know, social media or different people talking to them, and they think that they should start there, and that feels like a really hard place to get to quickly. And so what I recommend is that folks start with one of three things. Either, what are they still Googling? So instead of going to a search engine, go to an AI tool. Where do they get analysis paralysis, right? Where is it like, oh, I have so many things to compare. I don't have the time to go deep into each of these. And I feel like I need to make a decision, but I can't. And I've been sitting in this like need to make a decision space for too long. The third is, what are the places where you don't feel like it's a good use of your time, right? Where you're sitting there going, why am I spending the next hour doing this? There are so many other ways that I could and should be using my time right now. So those are really the three places that people can, that I recommend that folks get started using AI and experimenting with these tools.
Okay, entry points.
Yes, okay, exactly.
So like easy, low lift entry points.
Exactly, all right, exactly. All right. So then we started with Claude.
Let's start with Claude.
Yeah, right. So, and Claude is the one that I feel like most folks in this audience have probably played around with at least a little bit. But Claude,
Claude is the Anthropic tool.
Claude is the Anthropic tool. Yes. And Claude is really good for sort of general questions, for, you know, a chat tool. One of the things that we talked about that I like to recommend is projects, which are specific spaces that you can set up that have where you can give it a knowledge base. So you can give it a whole lot of background information that it can then pull into any answers that you're looking for. So we talk a little bit about projects and how to set them up. They're similar to Gemini Gems or custom GPTs in ChatGPT. And so that's Claude. And then folks got a few minutes to grab an idea, work together in small groups, or in pairs, and really experiment and get hands-on with the tool.
Now, what are some tips about setting up Claude that, that you shared? We don't want to be shortchanging nonprofit radio listeners here, since we didn't have the value of sitting in the session. What are some of your setup tips?
Yeah, my setup tips are, Claude is actually really easy to get, actually all of these tools are really easy to get started with, and so we don't actually spend a ton of time on setup, because there are so many different tutorials and things that talk about setup that you could spend such a long time in that configuration space without actually getting your hands onto the keyboard and typing in prompts and being like, okay, if this happens, what answer do I get back? What does it look like? So again, I talk a lot about projects as like a really good space to, and you can have many projects.
Like a project like what?
So there is on Claude in the top left corner.
Oh, this is a Claude option.
Yes, it's
choosing
a Claude option.
That,
yes, to choose projects. Right. And then, so when you choose a project, you can create a project. So let's say I have a project on for social media, right? I want it to write LinkedIn posts. What I could do is I could then give a knowledge base to that project of LinkedIn posts that I like, ones that I think are well formatted, maybe ideas of LinkedIn post formulas, blog posts, a couple of blog posts about LinkedIn posts that went viral, right? Things like that. And then whenever I want to write a LinkedIn post, I go into that specific project and I have the chat within that project because it has all of that context and knowledge already built in. And so one of the things that people talk about a lot is, you know, I ask AI to write an email for me or to write a LinkedIn post, and it doesn't sound like me at all, or it doesn't land, it doesn't feel right. And so projects are really a great way to train so that you spend significantly less time editing. One of the other tips,
because you're working on specific use cases,
right?
Each
exactly.
project is so a project is LinkedIn. Or a blog post.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
And one of the things that I suggest is early on as you're training that project, as you're doing that, let's say that you're writing a LinkedIn post or writing a blog post or even writing a newsletter, right? That the top section of a newsletter, you can co-create, so Claude can give you something and you can say, I like the second sentence, I don't like the opening, the whole second paragraph has to change, give me something that's a little bit more this flavor or that flavor, it'll give you something new. You can go back and forth with Claude in that way. And then what I usually do is at the end, I say, great, what did you learn about me, my organization, my style, and my tone through this co-authoring of this post? Turn that into an artifact or into a document, and then you can add that document also into your project knowledge base, so it will pull all that information in the future.
Oh, so asking it to analyze itself, what did you learn about me, right, and then use that iteratively.
Yes, because then it says like, oh, this is the kind of, like, you use fun toner, you're very like business, or this is for donor communication, it always has this kind of angle, or you always end with a CTA. Like, it will come up with all of the specifics about you based on that back and forth when you said, don't like this, like this, don't like this, like this.
All right, cool. All right, it's Claude. Which model should we talk about next?
So then we talked about Gemini.
This is the Google one.
Yes, and so Gemini is interesting because I think that Gemini lagged behind for quite some time. It was not a go-to option in terms of these AI tools. You heard a lot about Claude and ChatGPT and not so much about Gemini for a long time. And then Gemini really sort of like sped ahead and leapfrogged, I think, ChatGPT. Not quite Claude, but it actually became a very good tool. The other thing is that with Gemini, so Gemini itself, you use similarly to how you would use Claude. There's that chat functionality. They have gems, which are similar to projects. They also have scheduled actions, which I think are the easiest sort of agent-like setup, where basically you give it, you say, I want to know this thing, and please run it once a week. I have an out-of-the-box one running right now, which is every day it sends me something interesting that happened in history on this day. And that's an out-of-the-box one that actually Gemini offers. So it comes with scheduled actions, gems, and then Gemini, which you use like a chat functionality. But the other interesting piece is that it comes with, when you pay for Gemini, you also automatically get Notebook LM and Nano Banana. So Notebook LM is really good.
Nano Banana?
Nano Banana.
All right, I know you're going to explain what the hell that means. Okay.
Notebook LM is really good for lots of like larger research reports, or basically Notebook LM does a variety of things. One of the most common use cases for it are when people need to summarize notes or big reports, they'll put it into Notebook LM and they have a audio overview button and it will turn it into a podcast for you. So if you enjoy podcasts and listening to conversations and it's a little bit more engaging for you, it will turn into a podcast that you can then listen to.
It's not going to be equivalent to Tony Martinetti's nonprofit radio podcast, of course. It goes without saying, but I say it anyway.
Yes,
it won't be that quality, so you'll suffer, a lesser engaged. You might have a better host. You'll have a better host, but the guest experience is not going to be the same.
Yes, but if
it's
you think about
much
it,
lower quality.
But if you have like a 30-page report and you're like, okay, I just need a summary of this, right? Instead
summary.
Of reading it through, right? It makes it more interesting, more engaging.
If you like to learn that way,
exactly.
Right. Okay.
So it does that. It also, I know actually a lot of students that use it. There's a flashcard option, so you can turn, let's say, like a study guide or material into flashcards.
Very smart.
So I know a number of students that use it in that way as well. So that is what Notebook LM is. And then Nano Banana is Google's image generation tool. And it's sort of widely regarded as the best image generation tool out there right now. And you can enable it from the Gemini chat. If you say create an image, it will automatically use Nano Banana as what it's using to create that image.
Okay.
Or you can select, there's like a drop down and you can specifically select the tool Nano Banana to use for image generation. And then people got hands on, and there are a lot of images created, which are fun. But Nano Banana is very good at when you describe an image, or sometimes what I recommend it also is you can put in a newsletter or a communication that you want to go out, and you can say, create for me an image that would go along with this email, that would go along with this newsletter, etc. And it will, read the information, figure out, and at least give you a first draft. You can also tell it styles, like in watercolor style, in a sketch style, in realistic animation, in photograph, whatever. So those are some of the uses for Gemini.
Okay. Are we going to chat next?
No. Okay. I did not cover ChatGPT because I don't find that it's I don't find it's as good as a lot of the other tools at the moment. And I find that a lot of people have some experience with it, and so I like to get them sort of like digging into and diving into other tools.
All right. Before we go to another tool, I want to take a little digression to ask you what Tavlin Consulting is. What is that? It's Tavlin.
Yes.
Tavlin, what is that?
Yeah. So my consultancy is about helping people communicate more effectively. I have a software engineering background and a nonprofit background, and I've held executive leadership positions in both worlds. And so a lot of what I do is facilitate workshops, trainings, and conversations that sort of bridge that technical and non-technical and help people come together. So Tavlin is actually a Hebrew word word for like a spice mixture. And so that's what I'm always doing is, you know, one spice is fine, but a spice mixture together, right? All those different flavors, all those different people and things coming together, you know, just elevates everything and elevates what it can be. And the way that it's used in Hebrew is very often there's like different tavlin, there's different tavlins, there's different spice mixtures. And I like to think about that also as companies and organizations that no two are exactly the same, right? Yeah, even if it's like a little more paprika or a little more, exactly. So that's what tavlin means.
Okay, cool. Thank you. All right, let's go to another tool. Yes. I like distinguishing these tools.
Yes. Yeah. We have two more tools left.
Okay.
So next we covered perplexity. So perplexity is really used a lot for research and statistics. You know, what people often find and something that AI often gets knocked on is these hallucinations, right? Which are real, which are true, that if you ask for a study or statistics, you know, some of these other tools will make things up and will hallucinate. And even if you say, okay, where are you citing that statistic from? You know, give me a link to the study. It will give you a link. And if you click on it, it's like, oops, that doesn't actually exist. Yeah. Which is a big ray because it then creates more work to actually like get the statistic, chase it down, make sure it's real, etc. So that is not so much the case with perplexity. Perplexity gives you the list of sources, cited sources. It also, for each statistic, it will tell you how many sources or how many places it's cited in, which really gives you as a user the chance to say, okay, that one looks really reputable, that one not so reputable, right? So you get to choose which statistics you pull in. Or maybe there's a popular report that then gets cited in McKinsey and Forbes and all these different places. You can see that, and so you can say, okay, this is like a very legitimate study, a very legitimate statistic that I want to pull in for a donor communication, for training that you're doing, for conference talks. You know, I often use it in blog posts to, you know, support some of the things that I'm talking about. So So perplexity is great for those research and statistics.
Statistics, data, you can trust. It's more trustworthy than the other models.
Exactly. Okay. The other big difference that I always say is, you know, perplexity is, it's very much like a science, like it's very scientific. So in Gemini or Claude, if you ask it a question, usually it ends with, you know, gives you information, and then usually it ends with, what would you like me to create a slide deck for you? Would you like me to do this? Right? It'll sort of guide you into your next step. Perplexity is a little bit more like, I gave you the answers. These are the answers. We're done now. So it doesn't so much guide you anywhere else. It's a great tool. And I also think it's very like people use it specifically for research and statistics. And so, you know, it's personality. I like to think about some AIs as like what their personalities are. So the perplexity personality is very much like, I have given you the information and now we're done.
Straightforward and maybe not, hoping not snarky.
Yeah.
And I like to keep that to humans.
Yes.
But you have it. It's done.
Yeah.
We're done. We're done together.
Exactly.
All right.
And perplexity is it's great on a free model. It also has a pro model, and they run a number of different specials. So you can often get a year of Perplexity Pro free through a variety of different avenues. So I always recommend that folks sort of like Google around or check around to see what the offerings are, because it's you can often get extended time period to use it. The pro version.
Okay. And you got a fourth one?
Yes. The fourth one is the most fun. It's called Suno.
How's that spelled?
S-U-N-O.
Okay.
And Suno is song generation. So I use Suno a lot for background music, for like, you know, or introduction music for a virtual meeting. I use it often as, you know, sort of like an icebreaker, or, you know, it's a platform that puts a smile on people's face.
If we have a Zoom together, is there going to be welcome music? do you do that for all your Zooms?
No, not all my Zooms. But yeah, if I'm doing an all hands or like a larger, exactly.
There's background music as we're entering the room.
Exactly. Sometimes I'll also do like a thank you song for certain, because it really, and it's very, very simple. Like you can just put in, the example that I gave to this group was the prompt that I put in was an upbeat tempo, a song for nonprofit professionals describing all of the different hats that they have to wear in an upbeat tempo. And it comes up with, you know, a multi-minute song that has lyrics that, you know, are generally sort of entertaining. And so it's just a fun one to play with and to kind of have in your back pocket. Because sometimes, you know, you just need that morale boost. You need a little bit of fun come in.
And I'm sure you disclose that it's Suno generated.
Yes.
Right? You're not copywriting these songs.
No. Yeah.
I'm also not only a software engineer and a nonprofit consultant, but I also songwrite and do music and lyrics.
Mm. Yeah.
No, you don't claim that. Okay. Good. All right.
Yeah.
Straightforward. Honesty at Tavleen.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so those are the four tools that we walk through. We walk through, I always get asked about how, especially nonprofits, especially folks with limited budgets, how they should pick a tool. Because there's so much out there. Again, there's so much out there. There's different things that can be used for different specific circumstances and situations. So for that, I talk about it a little bit like AI tools as supermarkets, where you always have your go-to supermarket, right? The one that you know how all the aisles are laid out, that it basically has everything you need.
I'm picturing right now. I know where the produce is.
Right, exactly.
Even in the produce, I know where the bananas are.
Yeah. You probably have even like a specific time or times during the week that you go, right? So you might like know a cashier or a couple of cashiers.
Sure.
It's the place that you sort of like have invested in, that you know really,
really well.
They
know I bring my own bags.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, this guy doesn't want the plastic.
Exactly. And then there are other supermarkets that you go to for specific purposes, right? You might go to Trader Joe's when you want to stock up on really good snacks, or to, an H Mart when you want more variety of different sort of sauces or noodles or et cetera, right? And those might be supermarkets that you don't go to as often, right? Maybe you go once a month, maybe you go once every couple months, and you go for very specific purposes.
Yes.
And so I think about AI tools in the same way, that think about your use cases and who's going to use it. Is it going to be one staff member? Is it going to be multiple staff members? What are they going to be using it for? What are the use cases? And then pick one tool, pay for that tool, go all like train that tool, really make it sort of know your people, your business, like, you know, established projects or gems, whatever you're going to do, like spend the time there. And then the other ones, you know, all of these you can pay for month by month. So the other ones, you know, for the month that you need it, pay for a pro version, pay for a paid version for a month, and then discontinue it and you know, go back down to the free version. Because those can sort of, you can toggle them up and down easily. So I sort of think about it as like this supermarket,
I like your supermarket
model.
Metaphor. No,
yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, all right. You talk some about the limitations, pitfalls around introducing AI, getting started.
Yeah. Yes, I talk about a couple of things related to limitations and pitfalls. One is being aware of when you're using a free version versus a paid version. There are differences in the quality of the output. There are differences in if the models are training, right, or using the data that you're putting in to train their model more broadly, more widely, right? What proprietary information you put into a free version. Version of an AI is definitely something to be very aware of. So that's one. The second thing that I talk about a lot is compliance. So A lot of these AI tools, I always recommend that folks try to investigate if the tool that they're using, this is especially with note takers, because I feel like there are so many note takers coming out. People are always asking about note takers particularly. There is a compliance called SOC 2 Type 2, which is basically an independent audit that a company has to get that shows that they handle your data and the data in a specific fashion. And so it just provides a little bit more security, but it can be time, like it can take a lot of time to get SOC 2 compliance, and it is expensive for companies. And so some of the newer tools don't necessarily have that. They don't have a trust center. They don't have all of that sort of thought through and figured out. So I always like to say you should always be aware of what the security protocols are for the tools that you're using. The third is the third is around hallucinations. They are real, so just always make sure that you're checking your sources and making sure that you're not pulling in information that you're not certain is real and true. And lastly, I always recommend that folks put some sort of AI policy in place. It might change a dozen times over the next year, given the pace at which AI is accelerating, but just a little bit about what's the acceptable use, an understanding of, you know, risks and how you intend to manage those risks, and a little bit about oversight, if you intend to have any oversight. It doesn't have to be long. You can actually have AI generate a first draft of a policy for you. But I always recommend, because you'll have in any team, you'll have this spectrum, you'll have this range of folks that are like really, really hesitant and haven't touched it at all. And you'll have folks that are early adopters and they're jumping into a ton of different tools and really trying to connect everything together, et cetera. And you want everyone to be on the same page about what's okay to do and what's not okay to do in this moment for them and for your organization.
Let's pull a little more on the thread about your own data protection, making sure that you're, as you're uploading content, it's not being used for general consumption and learning of any of these models. Mm-hmm. How do we make sure that that's not the case?
Yeah, I think on all the free versions, I believe that's just part of. There is no way to sort of guard against that.
Right.
That's why I always recommend. You know, I know that. Companies don't have endless dollars, but it is good to sort of pick a tool and pay for it. And then in all the paid-for tools...
Favorite supermarket.
Right, yeah. Right. And then all the paid-for tools, there is a way to toggle off. Some places hide it more than others, but there is in settings a way to toggle off so that your materials can't be used to train sort of larger models. You just have to find the setting.
Okay, but it's worth looking for.
Yes, because, absolutely.
Because if you want to get close to one of these models, you're going to be giving it some proprietary data that you may not want released.
Yeah, exactly. I also often tell people that, you can often get what you want out of AI without having to put as much proprietary information as you think you do into the system, right? And so it's worth thinking about, I think it's easy to be like, okay, I have this spreadsheet, I'm just gonna put it in and do X, Y, and Z. But I think it's always worth thinking about, okay, for this task that I'm doing with this AI tool, what is the outcome? And I have the spreadsheet, do I need all the columns? Can the people just be numbers? Do I need first and last names? Like it often is just a couple of extra minutes of thought and really thinking about what's the outcome that I'm trying to get to. And then you can often get to a place where you actually don't have to put a lot of proprietary, or sometimes any proprietary information into the system in order to get the results that you want.
That's good advice. It's worth thinking through.
Yeah.
What do you need from that? What's the purpose here?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, perfect example. Do I need first and last name? Do I need any names at all? All right.
Right. Exactly.
So, Allison, I don't know. Share something else that we haven't talked about yet that you talked about in your session, or some questions. Maybe some questions that stuck with you from your session.
Yeah. I think the last thing that we talked about in the session was I gave a few sort of my top tips and tricks. And so a couple of them are When I'm learning something new, when I'm trying to get ramped up on something really quickly, I will sort of give the AI tool the concept, and I'll say, explain this to me like I'm 5, and then explain it to me like I'm 10, and then explain it to me like I'm a new college grad, and then explain it to me like I'm a professional with 25 years of deep experience in this area. And it's a really great way to just get really deep into a topic very quickly and understand the jargon and at what level different people operate. So that's one that I really like. I often will use I am as a, if I'm trying to, right, like whether I'm a client or a consumer or a whatever, I'll sort of give AI that whatever persona I'm trying to send a message to or connect with, right? So I am, you know, a nonprofit executive director with a team that has varied adoption uses. I really want them to adopt X tool. What plan would you recommend for us to go? Or even, you know, I'm on a team, I'm in a nonprofit, my executive director wants me to be using AI more. I don't really want to, you know, what plan might work for me, if it's the, you know, executive director sort of trying to put this plan together.
I had a guest earlier who said, you know, he uses his prompts, you are. He actually channels the Backstreet Boys. You are, you know, I don't know the song. But he does. You are. Does it make a difference? You are or I am?
No.
Okay.
Same difference,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also tell people that sometimes you just have to close the chat and open a new one. Sort of like, you know, with any technology, sometimes you just have to turn it off and wait 5 seconds and turn it on again. So with AI, like if you, sometimes it can just go in the wrong direction. And then once it has that context and it's sort of traveling in that path, it can be really hard to do a reverse direction or to be sort of like, no, this is like nowhere near what I want. And so sometimes just closing that chat and starting fresh is really the best way to go and will limit your frustration level.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a good one.
Yeah, these are Allison's tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Pro tips. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm trying to think which other ones there are. I think those are the top ones. Those are really good, really good go-tos to think about.
So just leave us with some inspiration for the rest of us.
Yes, I think some inspiration is AI tools are rapidly improving. Month by month. I also say, like, folks that tried it 6 months ago or a year ago and said, this was all hype, I don't understand why everybody's talking about this, should try the tools again, because they are getting better and better all the time. And again, like your adoption, your usage, you don't have to use the most complex scenario. You don't have to use what the AI master and whatever post has said and, you know, tying these 8 tools together and doing those sorts of things. It's really great to just start somewhere and get yourself to that first, what I call either like an aha moment or even like a, oh, that's interesting moment, and then go from there.
All right. Allison McMillan, CEO at Tavleen Consulting. Tavleen, the spice, you know, the spice hybrid, the spice mixture, bringing it all together. I love seeing women in software engineering too, or any engineering. So where'd you do your degree in software engineering?
I don't have a software engineering degree. I have a political science degree. Oh. And then had a startup, taught myself how to code.
Taught yourself?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, before boot camps were a thing, you know, 15 years ago. And then moved into software development, and then, you know, software engineering leadership. Worked at companies like GitHub. So yeah, it's my path has been a windy one, but no computer science degree here.
All right, that's okay. I still love seeing women in engineering, yes, in any of the sciences. All right, Allison McMillan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the 2026 Nonprofit Technology Conference.
It's time for Tony's Take 2.
Thank you, Kate. My book title is lengthy, but very it's precise. You're gonna know exactly what the book is about, and you'll see that my personality emerges in the book through the title. That I want you to see that from the title. I had a really long title, but I ran into a constraint at Amazon. They only allow 200 characters for the book title and the subtitle. And your book goes nowhere these days if you don't publish through, print through Amazon. Not publish. I'm self-publishing. They're not a publisher. They're a printer. If you don't sell, they're a bookseller, really, and a printer, of course. If you don't sell your book through Amazon, you don't get very far. So their constraint pretty much sets the tone for the book titles in the world. So here is the new book title: Planned Giving Accelerated. The Cut Through the Shit, No Nonsense, Practical Step-by-Step Guide to Start Legacy Giving Fundraising at Your Small to Mid-Sized Nonprofit Simply in 1 week with Bequests. Now, that happens to be exactly 200 characters, including spaces. They're very precise about that, includes because the space is a character, but they say it explicitly. So I used to have, it was finally some Plan Giving Accelerated. Finally, someone wrote a cut through the shit, no nonsense, practical. But I had to cut out, finally someone wrote a, but I like the Plan Giving Accelerated, the cut through the shit, no nonsense, practical step-by-step guide, et cetera, et cetera. I like the, there's not one among many. How many cut through the shit, no nonsense, practical step-by-step guides to start legacy giving fundraising at your small to mid-size nonprofit simply in 1 week with Bequests could there be? There could only be one. That's this one. The. So sometimes constraints lead to more precision. You gotta tighten it up. You know, you cut out the flab. So that actually is an advantage. I like that. The cut through the shit, no nonsense, practical step-by-step guide to start legacy giving fundraising at your small to mid-sized nonprofit simply in 1 week with Bequests. Now, I used to have, following that, a parenthetical in the title. The title may be longer than the book. Did you need a nap? That was in the title. Now that, it can't be in the title anymore because I hit this Amazon 200 character constraint. But it can still be on the book cover. It's just not part of the title. You can cram and squeeze as much as you want onto a book cover. It just can't all be part of the title. So that's what I'm going to do. So we're not losing. I am not surrendering. The title may be longer than the book. Did you need a nap? I think that's important. I think it sets the tone. You know, this is not going to be an academic type text. It's not going to be your average journal type text. This is a book you're going to have some fun with. So, just wanted to keep you apprised of the latest developments. That's a significant one because it's the title. Again, Planned Giving Accelerated. The Cut Through the Shit, No Nonsense, Practical Step-by-Step Guide to Start Legacy Giving Fundraising at Your Small to Mid-Sized Nonprofit Simply in 1 week with Bequests. And then, of course, the title may be longer than the book, Did You Need a Nap? But that's not officially in the title. But that is Tony's Take Two. Kate?
I like how you said you are not surrendering to Amazon's character count limit. You are not surrendering. No surrendering here.
No surrender. No reset. Absolutely. It came out better.
I'll be honest. I'll probably just type into my Amazon Planned Giving Accelerated by Tony Martinetti. But your title does sound very, very special.
It is.
And very larger than life, like I know you are.
Oh, thank you. All right. I'm glad you didn't say, sounds very interesting. I was afraid you were going to say, oh, it sounds very interesting, which is kind of dull. No, sounds special. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think it is. And we're sticking with it.
We've got buku buttloads more time. Here is your AI acceptable use policy.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 26 NTC, the 2026 Nonprofit Technology Conference in Detroit. My guest now is Eric Mulho. Eric is founder of Bond Partners. Eric's topic is step-by-step, creating your nonprofit's AI acceptable use policy. Eric, welcome to Nonprofit Radio.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
It's a pleasure. Is this your first NTC together?
Or
first
it is.
NTC, I should say. Not yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great conference. This is our 12th coming
year. Oh, my goodness.
12th.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's been wonderful so far.
And we'll be at number 13 in Portland next year. Just give us an overview of the topic.
Sure.
Before we dive into some detail.
Yeah, yeah. So there are two things I'm trying to really address here with this topic. The first, obviously, is this whole notion of the acceptable use policy. So we know everybody is using AI, right? Like I was just scanning some of the... You've probably been talking a lot about it every day, right?
Yes.
But a lot of organizations haven't yet caught up in terms of their policies and in terms of providing people with guidance and guardrails and direction about how we use this as an organization. And some organizations may not even be aware that some of their staff are using some of these free tools and perhaps doing some of their work leveraging AI, and may or may not be doing that in the way that we want them to. So the first thing that I'm going to be talking about is actually some of those policies that I think organizations need to be thinking about. The broader issue that I'm hoping to talk about is just how we build a culture within an organization around usage of AI, so that we are really embracing it, so that we're talking about it, so that we are leveraging the expertise that we have in the organization itself as we start down this journey.
Very good. Thank you. So let's dive into these topics. Both the... There we go. As I unclip a little microphone. So, your policy and also a culture. Culture. All right. So we could take them in that order. Let's talk about what belongs in your policy. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the key pieces?
Well, there are quite a few aspects that people need to be thinking about. What I'm going to focus on today is trying to bring that down to a manageable number of things. The first thing that most people probably think about when they're thinking about policy is protecting your data, right? We nonprofits are using all sorts of data that they need to be thoughtful of when they're using some of these AI tools. So that may be your donor data, that may be client information, it could be grant information, whatever it is. You've got stuff out there that you have to provide some guidance to your team as to what they can do and what they can't do. In other words, AI is a fantastic tool for segmenting your donor data or taking a look at donor trends or trying to understand when and how gifts are coming in. But we can't do that just by doing a download of our Salesforce information and chugging everything up into ChatGPT and saying, tell me what the answer is. So we have to have some rules in place around our data to make sure that people understand what is personally identifiable information, what our tools and processes are for gaining approval, and when we're going to use some of that. Whatever that looks like, we've got a lot of data that we have to be thoughtful of, which is one piece of that. Another piece is transparency. Thinking about when are we disclosing, when are we talking about AI? And this comes about, you know, in very simple aspects, right? Many of us use AI meeting note takers, or we use record meetings or record information, and then we're leveraging AI to help us maybe generate notes or whatever it might be. We probably as an organization need to be clear as to when we're using this and when we aren't, when we're telling people we're using it, when we aren't telling people we're using it. Another area that we I think is valuable for folks to be aware of is, of course, accuracy. So AI tools make mistakes. They have hallucinations. They make stuff up. What's our process? What's our approach to making sure that we aren't feeding up wrong information, incorrect information within the organization. Many organizations probably need to have some sort of formalized two-person proofing process or another set of eyes taking a look at outputs and the results that people are generating when they're moving forward. There are ethical and sustainability concerns. So, you know, I've worked with organizations that are environmentally conscious. I've worked with other organizations that are really focused on content creators. Well, those organizations may have very distinct rules and may have very distinct policies that they want to develop that match their values and match their mission, because AI has a particular role to play in some of those areas. So okay, lots of aspects to consider.
Okay, so these are elements of our acceptable use policy.
Exactly. And the key is to start the conversation, right? The key is that we want to engage our staff, and we want to give our staff, again, kind of the rules of the road, so they don't get into trouble and we're not getting into trouble as an organization.
What's your advice around the accuracy part of that, ensuring accuracy? You mentioned, you know, two human review.
Yep.
What else can we have in place? Because That is a risk that I think...
Huge risk.
These are all huge, but that's the one that puts a lot of people, I think, off AI, or
correct,
or they'll only adopt AI for the most mundane tasks.
Right. Well, we can, when we are doing our prompts, and I'm thinking here, we should probably make a distinction here. AI is a massive topic. I am talking, generally speaking, about the large language models, the generative AI that we are using through a ChatGPT, a Claude, a Copilot, something along those lines. Many of us have used these tools. There are lots of different ways that they are embedded in other software and in other programs, but generally speaking, I'm going to focus on that area. One of the things we can do is, as we're working with the AI tools and as we are prompting them, we can say, show your work. What's your source for this data? Where are you getting this information from? And actually clicking on the link that it tells us. So making sure that we are, as an individual, when we're getting some quote of data or information fed back to us, we can take a look at that information. As an organization, then, we can also have policies and procedures in place in terms of how we are fact-checking and how we are proofing this. This may be a new policy or a new way that we go about work, but before something goes out on email, before it goes out in our annual report or in our fundraising appeal, do we have somebody who isn't the writer having eyeballs on that and highlighting, hey, you mentioned this fact here, tell me where it came from, how did you come about doing that? Yeah. So there are things both technologically and within our processes that we can do to make sure that people are protecting themselves.
How about the transparency? You mentioned, you know, there may be use cases where you're not revealing that you used artificial intelligence.
Well,
I mean, that could be something as mundane as, you know, write me an email.
Right.
And obviously the person reviews the email. Are there other cases where it's not necessary, or where you actually have an obligation to disclose that you have used one of the tools?
I think it's very important. The example I mentioned, I do think it's very important when we have meetings and recordings and that kind of information that we are disclosing that.
Okay, like you mentioned, meeting notes, transcribers, note takers.
I do a ton of interviews in my practice, and so the start of every conversation is, hey, wanted to call your attention to the fact that I've got my note taker in the room. Is that okay with you? And make sure that we are disclosing that. Within organizations, I think I want us to disclose the use of AI to build that culture piece, right? I want people, in my perfect world, more people within the organization would say, hey, I'm working with AI to help me solve this problem. What do you think about this result? Or I looked at the data, then I went to AI, then I refined it. Here's my final work product. So that we are creating a culture within the organization that says these are valuable tools that we all need to be using and we all need to be learning from. I think particularly, and I'm seeing less of this, but I think there is a little bit of this that was still the case when a lot of these tools were launched in 2022, a lot of fear, a lot of oh my goodness, this is cheating. Oh my goodness, this is
going to take jobs
and all of that. And I think we've got to really turn that on its head, and we've got to share with one another how we can be more effective, how we can be more efficient, how we can be more productive when we're leveraging these tools, so that it becomes, again, a tool, not replacing somebody or not replacing the critical human element, but one of the tools we use. In the same way that we might say, hey, I took your data, this is the analysis I did in Excel, what do you think, does this look accurate? We need to get to a place where we're also saying those and disclosing that this is one of the valuable ways that we're accomplishing our work. And that will both send a signal that this is okay, this is how we do things, and hopefully it will help us learn. One of the reasons I love doing these presentations is invariably at some point in the presentation, it's like, well, how are you using these tools? And I continue to be blown out of the water. Like, people are doing crazy, wonderful things with these tools. And the more we begin to be exposed to how people are leveraging them, the more we can look at our own work and say, oh, I wonder if it could help me with this.
What are some crazy things?
I've heard people talk about how they've leveraged AI to with dialects of language, that it is actually more effective to be able to say, hey, we're working with this particular population from Guatemala or something like that, that may have some distinct dialects, and the AI tool is pretty darn accurate in terms of translation. I had one of the examples, not to steal my own thunder for tomorrow, but one of the examples I use, I was...
Nobody's going to hear this before tomorrow.
Oh, all right. All right. That's good.
We're not that fast.
One of the examples I use is a food shelf, and they do a lot of Meals on Wheels. It's one of their programs. They do multiple programs. They realized they were spending a ton of time answering questions from folks. When's my meal going to get here? Who's my driver? What time should I expect them? Like, a lot of manual phone calls coming in. They're developing an app with AI now that would be like DoorDash, that says to these folks, hey, your meal left our warehouse. Julie is your driver. She should be there between 11 and 11:30. I'm like, how cool is that? Like, just amazing stuff that people can come up with.
Let's move from the policy to the culture.
Yeah.
I mean, folks may be using this and you don't even know.
Correct.
So they're certainly not adhering to any policy because you don't even know that they're doing it. That's the worst case.
Yep.
That is worse than nobody even adopting it.
I think that's bad on both ends.
I guess it's a lesser of two evils. If I was the CEO, I'd rather nobody be using it than people be using it rogue. And we don't know, and they're not disclosing it because we don't know, and we don't know what they're doing with it. I'd rather the former, but in today's world, they're both setting you behind.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So a culture around the adoption of and responsible use of these large language tools.
Yeah.
That's a very broad. That's why I'm consulting an expert. Broad question for somebody who thinks about these things.
A lot of it is the theme that I've been mentioning moving forward. Is I think it's very valuable for senior leadership to be able to disseminate out to the organization. We're going to use these tools. We see value in them. We see value in you, too. We're not going to use these tools to get you out of a job. But we see value in these tools, and so we're going to use them. We need to communicate out to people, and we have rules about how to use them, right? Like any tool, they can be used for good, they can be used for evil. So we're going to use them for good, and this is the way we're going to protect our client data, this is the way we're going to protect our donor data, etc. And this is some guidance that you can have as an employee, as somebody who's working or a volunteer, in order to use the tools effectively. So first of all, we have to say that we're going to use them. I think secondly, as I alluded to earlier, I think we want to create a culture within our organizations where we're learning iteratively, right? And that's what this whole process has been. That's what AI is all about, right? We're constantly throwing prompts back and forth to the tools to say, okay, now do it this way. Think about it this way. Reframe it this way. I think we want that within our organization, where people are, how are you using it? Oh, I'm using it for this. That sounds interesting. Did you get good results? Didn't you? I tried this prompt. I tried phrasing it this way. And leveraging our own learning so that we're moving the work forward.
I like your analogy of learning from each other the way we want the tool to learn from us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There are experts. There are probably experts in any organization, whether you've got 8 people in your organization, 80 or 800, there are already people who are pretty far down this rabbit hole who are experts in one of these tools. And we need to leverage that. We need to take advantage of their learning and what they've discovered.
All right, so we need leadership buy-in for this AI culture creation.
Yeah.
How do we, I don't know, do we need to make the case? I don't. Maybe there's some CEOs that, well, they may see the value, but they also may be fearful of the transparency, the accuracy, the ethics,
right,
the environmental sustainability. So how do we make the case that the benefits are going to outweigh the costs and concerns of the CEO?
You know, one of the little cheats I have as a consultant is when I'm in doubt as to how to answer somebody, I'm like, it always comes back to the mission, which is true. It always comes back to the mission. Nobody got into this work because they want to run spreadsheets for their whole life. Well, maybe a few finance people did, yeah. But most of the people who are in nonprofit work, most of the people who are here at this conference today, got into this work because they're passionate about the work that they're doing, because of the mission that they're doing. So I would say to a CEO, to an executive director, you've got this amazing mission to accomplish, and you don't have nearly enough people, and you don't have nearly enough money to get everything done that you want to get done. And now we have this transformative technology, this amazing AI tool that we're all exploring and we're all on this journey that can help you to become more efficient, more effective, that can leverage the talent that you have brought onto your organization to achieve your mission. So I would frame, you know, this conversation around the culture. I would always bring it back to the mission and say, we have the capacity to help more folks or to achieve more of whatever it is we're trying to achieve when we are leveraging these tools to create internal efficiencies, to help us think differently, to help us troubleshoot in new ways. So I think it's that big picture that the CEO is or the executive director is really responsible for disseminating out. I think what's also important on the culture piece, especially this intersection of acceptable use and the culture piece, is that we not get lost in the lawyers and HR and IT, right? These are tools to help people get work done. And so in the organization, we want the focus to be on getting the work done, getting it done effectively, getting it done ethically, getting it done within our values. Our IT partners help us to make sure we're keeping it safe, to help us understand that we've got consistent tools, that people aren't going rogue on us. Our HR and our lawyer folks help us make sure, again, that we're not violating policies, that we're not violating laws. But the big picture, mission, what are we trying to accomplish? That's what we need to keep our eyes on, and the policies and the conversations that we're having have to serve that.
And as we're focusing on big picture and having this conversation with the leadership, you know, we may identify maybe small things we can begin with.
Absolutely.
I had a guest call them, you know, pilots.
Yeah.
Let's test. Let's see. Hopefully it's going to be successful.
Right.
The test is going to... The H-naught is going to be proven that this does, in fact, work to the benefit of the mission.
Yeah.
But we can start with small steps to bring leadership along.
Absolutely. And I think we can start in small steps, you know, both in that literal sense of like pilot projects or someone, what would happen if we rethought our email campaign, or we did a deep dive in our email campaign, leveraging AI and trying to make that more effective and more efficient. Great pilot project. We could go and run with that. But it's also small steps in terms of, you know, an executive director who's at this conference, goes to a ton of sessions. What can they do next Monday? What can they do in 3 days? Well, why don't you gather together the folks who are already using the tools? Let's hear how they're using it. Let's just have a lunch and learn and figure out where people are at. Let's take some small steps. We don't have to hire a trainer or a consultant. Let's all gather together in the conference room and say, hey, how are you using these tools? Where are you finding value? Where are they wasting your time? Where are they adding value to what you're trying to do? So the small steps is both, you know, the literal how do we launch a project or how do we do a pilot? But it's also on the culture side. How do we open this conversation to make sure that we understand where people are at?
Who should be going, jumping back to the policy, because we're talking about the team, meeting with the team. Who should be contributing to the policy?
Yeah, I think obviously there are some subject matter experts. You know, if you have a larger organization where you've actually got maybe HR and development and IT, you would probably want all of those folks in there. If you're a small shop, you may be able to develop and leverage a policy within, you know, by leveraging one or two people within the organization, leveraging AI as a tool to help you develop the policy. We'll be talking about that.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, one of the assets that most small organizations have that I don't always think they take a great advantage of, your board members. Your board, every single person on your board is going through this exact same conversation in their organization, and they have expertise to share as well. What I wouldn't do, personally, what I wouldn't do is just call the lawyer and say, we need a policy. I think you want to take a look at how people are using this. I think you want to take a look at the existing policies you already have in place. You probably have a data protection policy already in place. We may just need to modify it, or we may need to clarify or do some training with the staff that says, okay, here's our policy, here's how it applies to AI. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we want to just make this a legalistic conversation. There's a role to be played there. My brother's a lawyer, I'm pro lawyers, but we don't want that to be the focus. We want the focus to, again, come back to the work that people are doing to achieve the mission.
You mentioned using AI to create the AI acceptable use policy.
Yeah.
What are you going to say about that?
I think it's a great starting point. I think this is, you know, you think about any policy. I don't care what it is. You want to revamp your data use policies. A lot of executive directors might spend 4 hours searching the web, going to other like similar organizations. They might call their executive director friends. They might call a lawyer. They might, you know, gather 5 different drafts and then cobble together their own new tool. That's not an uncommon way of developing a new policy. Well, why not craft a great prompt and start there? Yeah. 30 seconds of work and you've got maybe 80% of it in place. Take a look at that, circulate that with the team, and then when you're at a place where you're like, yeah, I think this is it, then check it over with the lawyers and the board to make sure you're in the right place.
Okay, start with you are not a lawyer contributing to an AI acceptable use policy. You're not a lawyer, you're the marketing, you're the marketing person, whatever. Fundraising, your social media, whatever.
I think the other thing that you know, when you're starting to develop these policies, and again, where AI could be a real benefit in them, is the nuance of your values. So in other words, in that prompt, you know, if I were to prompt ChatGPT to develop a policy for me, I would probably give them a lot of I would give it a lot of context. I would say I'm an 8-person team. Our mission is to do this. We have really sensitive data from our donors. We have some federal grants. You know, kind of lay out that. And I would say, and here's our mission, and here's our values, because I think it's important, and we can create policies that reflect those values. And that's part of why every organization needs their own policy, because we all have different values, we all have different priorities, and we need to make sure those are reflected in the policies.
You want to leave us with something else that we haven't talked about yet that you are going to cover in your session? Or maybe a little more detail than you... Don't hold back on nonprofit radio listeners.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of the content that I'm going to present, one of the foundational frameworks that I'm just going to skirt by, but I would recommend as a resource to the listeners, it was created a couple of years ago by the folks at fundraising.ai. They have a comprehensive acceptable use policy. It's got about 11 different elements to it. It includes just about everything you could imagine. And the reason I think it's so valuable is not that every organization needs 11 pages of content for their acceptable use policy, but it's a great thought experiment. It kind of walks you through, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that piece? Have you thought about this particular piece? And so I often, and it's included in my presentation, I hold that up as sort of the, this is the full you know, Cadillac version. This is the high end that you would, that you may someday achieve. And then for our session, we're going to dig into kind of the first four or five that you need to tackle.
All right.
Fundraising.ai. That's the resource.
The culture and the plan.
Absolutely.
All right. That's Eric Mulho, founder at Bon Partners, B-O-N Partners. Eric, thank you very much for sharing.
Thanks, Tony. Right. Appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure.
All right.
And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of the 2026 Nonprofit Technology Conference.
Next week, more from 26 NTC with cybersecurity on a shoestring and disaster recovery and incident response for accidental techies. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at TonyMartinetti.com.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.